You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM.
Welcome back to the Batuta Advocate radio show, recording live here in Desert Rock FM studios. You've got myself, Clancy Overall, and Wendell Hussey. How are you, Wendell?
Yeah, good, thanks, Clancy. Getting back into it.
A little bit of a slow start to the year, I guess. They do say the news never sleeps, but it's slept out here for a little while. It's been quiet over the Christmas break.
It's true. It was a much less stressful Christmas, I find. That's what I'm hearing from a lot of people, is that we didn't have those borders and didn't have to worry about people fucking giving each other COVID at Christmas, which was certainly the case last year.
Did have to deal with the in-laws, though. That's
yeah. But it was a bit more surgical, it felt, you know. Everyone, after 2 years of lockdown, that 2022 Christmas, everyone was trying to get together at any cost, and everyone ended up catching COVID if they didn't already have it. This time around, I think it felt a bit smaller, a bit more low-key. I don't know if I believe in this whole burnout thing, but I think everyone, after a year of back at it, where no one said no to anything, everyone was kind of a bit overwhelmed socially. Social battery needed to be recharged, which is the point of the Christmas holidays, I guess. Relaxing, it's hard to relax with 40 relatives on top of you.
But it was almost nice. It was nice to have Auntie Jackie back at it again, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Back out.
Back out, back at it, stirring up trouble on Christmas Day.
Absolutely.
So, you missed it.
Speaking of stirring up trouble, today's guest is a pioneer of that. He's a I've got all kinds of words to describe him. He's a media identity. He's a rap aficionado, rapper, almost heading towards rap stalwart now, wouldn't you reckon?
Yeah, young uncle.
Young uncle, yeah. He's an emerging elder.
Fee's gone up.
Yeah, fee's gone up. And he's in events, and he's a fixer. Black Godfather, I don't know. There's all kinds of titles for today's guest. Thank you for joining us, Nookie.
Hey, cheers for having me.
Now, Nook, we've met each other over the years at an assortment of events and benders and whatever, rallies. and I've always really appreciated your stuff as an artist, but also, you know, as a community figure, as a community organiser. And right now is always, I mean, this year is going to be a difficult year for Aboriginal people in this country, because their entire history and existence is going to be put under the, you know, put through a blender by the newspapers, and we start talking about the Indigenous voice and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be, I reckon it'll probably get a bit of culture wars about it. It's already happening now.
It's already happened in the culture wars.
And we've seen it with, we saw it with the plebiscite where, you know, every kind of gay man and the woman in the country were forced to justify their existence. The same thing's going to happen to the Aboriginal people, and that's not a first, because you've obviously been doing it ever since the first boat arrived. And not only this year, but also this particular time of the year, when we start heading towards January 26th, the lamb ad's already out, you know.
Is it? I've caught this one.
you missed the lamb ad. That's basically when this fucking debate kicks off, you know. And as we've seen over the last 10 years, the idea of January 26th being treated as more of a day of commemoration as opposed to a day of celebration. Some people don't even want to acknowledge it. And there's still a few people down there in the Shire that want to wear a flag over their shoulders. We see a lot of flags on January 26th, but we're talking about the Australian flag in this circumstance. Someone who will be wearing the Aboriginal flag over the shoulders is you.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us, and, you know, we won't have to touch on it for too long, but where were you when you started thinking about this thing called Australia Day?
Yeah, I think going back, my earliest memories would be like 12 or 13 when I really grasped what it was. But for me, right, my old man, he's a bit of a big old bastard.
Yeah.
He's, you know, 6'2", something like that, a couple kilos, like old footy player, like his old weapon, right?
Country rugby league.
Yeah, South Coast.
Yeah, I've seen the jersey.
Yeah, Bombardier Swamp Rats. And
CRL.
I'd get crucified for that. He was a Nowra warrior. He stayed on our side of the bridge. That's
Isn't one of those guys that's got, like, obviously a few extra kilos or whatever, but still, like, looks hard? Like, you wouldn't run at him?
Yeah, but, like, he does look
cuddly.
Yeah. No, he was so, like, yeah, he worked his way up the ranks, started at fullback, and then from there went to playmaker, then prop, finished at prop.
But that is the perfect transition, just moving close. closer and closer and closer until you finish up in the middle.
Getting slower.
Getting slower.
He's you know, one of those old tricky black fellas, like, even, you know, he might have been 110 kilos, but his ball skills were hectic, you know? So
still throwing a dummy in the middle. It's just maybe no one's behind at that time.
Big prop doing a chip and chase. Oh, yeah. It was mad. I love it.
Yeah, they got a good 20 metres in them, good 10 metres.
That's it. It was good for one burst.
Acceleration. The acceleration off the mark.
Like, the later years in his career, like, you'd see him just go one mad burst and then hand up. I'm done.
take a knee. I'm hurt.
But, yeah, like, even when he was a little fella, like, people would, you know, step out of the way, and you'd ask, you know, all the accounts I got, you know, kind of growing up, everyone talking about the old man, like, fuck, he was the only person that hurt you when, you know, he'd run at you.
Yeah.
And that's back when he was, you know, number one. Yeah. By the time he got the number eight, he's putting them to sleep every game. Yeah. I'd be at school, the boys would rock up like, fuck, you should have seen your old man on the weekend. So, yeah, like, you know, by the time I was, you know, a teenager, that's when he was a big boy.
Yeah.
And, so my first memories of Australia Day, like, my old man be putting the curry flag up on the house and just sitting on our steps with his shirt off, just sitting there this on guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be in there watching TV, watching cartoons or playing the PlayStation and that. And then I just hear bimps every couple of minutes, and I was like, what's going on? And mum's like, oh, dad's out the front there with the flag and that.
Mm.
I never really knew what it was, and then I asked him, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm fucking letting these cunts know who's landed this.
Yeah.
So what he goes, oh, you know, this survival day, and he kind of they broke it down to me. And then,
so you're very much in a survival day family, not, you know, there's different ways of looking at it. As I said before, there's invasion day of solemn kind of commemoration, and then there's a day of survival.
Yeah. So it was a mix. It was a mix of invasion day and survival day. But yeah, that was the first memories. And then from that, my mum took me to Redfern, and I went to one of the survival day concerts with YRMC was performing. And then again, that was kind of like first time seeing black rap.
Yeah.
So I went from, you know, old man out the front staunching the drivers going past to Survival Day Redfern.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I guess around that time, I mean, given your age, you know, you're square in the millennials, I guess you'd say, it actually, this idea of Australia Day ramped up in your lifetime.
You know,
it wasn't actually ever meant to be a big thing. I guess it was the Cronulla riots era when they started politicising it in a different way, which was to, you know, basically forcing people to have barbecues and telling them that this is what you do. Before that, it was day off, really, in the eyes of most of the nation. And then, of course, the Aboriginal community kind of came to the challenge and kind of delivered a louder voice over it. And that, you know, that's obviously been hard work. But as we see every year, the rally gets bigger and bigger. I mean, it was one year, it was 20, 30,000 people down there, even in Melbourne, which, you know, I guess is historically Fitzroy, and that is pretty similar to a Redfern, but, you know, that's happening in Melbourne. Brisbane always goes off too, actually. They get the motorbikes at the front of the rally in Brisbane, the MOB.
Yeah.
Murray Original Bike Riders. And so when did it kind of occur to you that you were going to do music? Like you said, you saw them down there in Redfern, some of the early kind of rap. Sure, Shakaya was there.
Yeah, oh man, first time seeing Shakaya was at Westfield, Wollongong.
Yeah, Wollongong,
like in the little arcade bit there, you know what I mean? Like, you could walk through that, there's a little concrete sort of stage. Shakaya was on it, handing out posters and shit.
Stop calling me.
That was it. That was mad.
Yeah.
So the music thing. So yeah, the first, you know, first sort of guys I seen doing it were YRMC and Southwest Syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had a big cousin from Queanbeyan, later moved up to Newcastle. Ryan Selway was his name. And so he was like the big cousin in the city, you know, the cool cousin that you wanted to be like. Trust me, like everything he'd done, I'd do.
Yep.
Like there was certain cousins like I idolized and I copied them. I had one cousin, went to the school disco, smashed the window. So my next school disco, made it my mission to smash the window. Done it.
Yeah.
So
just a real influence
in your life. So my cousin Ryan, one of the most gifted fellas I've come across, and you know, to this day, like, I put him up one of the best rappers I've ever seen. But you know, standard black fella just rap in the shed, all the talent in the world, but you know, just didn't really get out there with it. So I started rapping just because he did. Yep. He was doing it, and I, you know, thought it was mad, so I started doing it just copying him.
How old were you then? Like, you 12, 13 or younger?
Around that again, 13, 14.
Yeah.
You know, started doing it a bit more seriously in around 16.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's how I got into it, just because he done it, so I done it. And, the first kind of, you know, interaction with it, like he come down home and he had his little laptop and a bunch of programs on there. And, you know, one holidays he made a bunch of beats and he put them on a CD for me and, like, he left them with me. And I used to listen to them all the time, not even rapping, just listen to them. So I'd, you know, put them in my little Discman, and when I'd fuck off to school, I'd be listening to that on the way in. And, you know, school was hard for me. Like, I was one of those kids that's super disengaged. Like, it wasn't my spot, you know what I mean? And there's lots of racism at the school, so, you know.
It's down narrow.
Narrow, yeah. So I was, you know, extremely disengaged, you know, had problems with my emotions. I was angry a lot of the time, fighting, arguing, wagging, you know, all the standard shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, one day I was, I was sitting in a class, and I remember this one, like, pretty vividly. The teacher was talking about Stolen Generation, and you know, the teacher said some shit along the lines of, you know, it was never from a bad place. A Stolen Generation was meant to help the well-being of Indigenous people. As soon as I heard that, fuck this, boom, stood up, started walking home. So I started walking home, and you know, the standard, I had the CD in my bag, and as I was walking, Narrow was a little town, so, like, you notice new shit. There was, like, a building there, just open, freshly painted, wasn't even open. And there was, I walked in there, you know, a little inquisitive black fella, standard little country boy, walking around, just asking questions. And
what's going on?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was walking in and said, hey, what's this? That's, you know, something along those lines. And they're like, oh, this is a youth center. This is where youth can come in and hang out. So, oh, so I can hang out here. And they're like, yeah, you can hang out here. Mad. Thought I could hang out there and then on the spot. They're like, oh, no, not now. We're not open. We're not open, but we're about to open. I was like, oh, cool, cool. And then they said, we have a music studio downstairs if you want to have a look. I said, yeah, fucking hope. Well, I'll have a look. Went downstairs and, you know, there was a guy sitting there that had a microphone and a computer and stuff. And, you know, he asked me on the spot. He goes, oh, look, you know, since you're here, do you want to record a song? I said, oh, yeah, mad. So I had the CD in my bag, chucked it in, started rapping. All I said was, fuck this, and that person's a cunt. And but after I finished, like, all the anger I was just feeling from school was like I put it into the microphone, you know?
What a whirlwind afternoon.
So I went, went back home and, had the song on me, listened to it, but, like, I was pretty much back at the youth center every day, tormenting the old mate downstairs to record me and that.
some nerdy little youth worker on the computer. That would have been a good little fucking buddy comedy there, I reckon.
Oh, bros, you could, you could make a mad little TV series about the youth center and what we got up to. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years from there, rapping's what got me kicked out of school. So I get to year 12, right? And I would have been the first in my family to do year 12. So it was a thing. So I got the year 12, I'm like, mad, I'm here. And then it comes time to doing me HSC, right? And, you know, I tried to do a big cultural event back on the South Coast, mixing music, dance, all sorts of things. So it's always been, you know, within the vision. But, you know, I was only in year 12. Like, I didn't really have the runs on the board. I had no fucking runs. Wasn't even on the board. So, you know what I mean? Like, the school wasn't really getting behind that. So I thought, oh, fuck it. I'm going to do a little CD, a little mixtape. Hand that in. There was a song on there called Subliminal Twist. Dissed all the teachers in there.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Take the piss
In the song. So there was a price. Is this the price of education, heartaches, racism, indiscrimination? There was a hunt. You know what I rhymed that one with. Yeah. It was like, black fella on the hunt, sick of being caught a little black.
Yeah.
That one. And then there was a teacher named Nanos. I was like, fuck me, what rhymes with Nanos? Oh, you can't catch me, I'm quicker than a nanosecond. Boom.
Yeah.
Got them all in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hand that in. Yeah, you know, standard day at Nowra High. Corey Webster to the principal's office. Go down there. There's my little CD sitting on his desk. He looks at me. He goes, refuse to mark this. You sign yourself out now or we're kicking you out. Give me the papers. Yeah, and that was it.
That was the end of school.
It. Yeah.
Did any teacher say anything to you about it? Like, was anyone?
Nah, never got to see the teachers again from that moment. It was pretty much, you're gone.
It's an incredible way to get kicked out of school. It's like, I don't think anyone's ever put that much work into it.
it would have made an impression too.
Yeah. You know, the fuck thing was like 3 months ago, I would have been fucking finished.
Could have let
me finish.
I know. Would have been the first.
Could have let me go, but nah. Done.
So was that the job from there on out, or did you find work, or how'd you?
That was it. That actually, like, from there, I went and done CDP for a couple months at the youth centre. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the CDP days, you can, you know, do your little job. You even mowing grass or finding something. So went and worked at the youth centre for a little bit, but it was pretty much that day. Went home, told mum and dad, say, look, kicked out of school, I'm off. And then from there, you know, come to Sydney not too long after, and I was knocking around Redfern Community Centre a lot, recording there, and that's how I got into it.
And then tell me, how did it, because, you know, all of a sudden it goes from youth centres and I guess what they call bedroom rapping to Bad Apples.
Yeah.
So what happened there?
Yeah, so, man, this is like a bit of a long yarn, but so from going to the youth centre and stuff, the community centre, like back when you were saying, you know, it was the heart of Indigenous Sydney still.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a thing for people to come visit. Like Snoop Dogg rocked up that one time. You know, people would just
all
come.
The old uncles on the block remember when Michael Jackson came
through. Oh, yeah, yeah. Fuck, I think Ali rocked up one time. Like, you know, it's just a spot they'd go to.
Tom Cruise.
But yeah, this is back when you couldn't get taxis there. Like trying to get a taxi to Redfern back in the days, like, it wasn't happening.
Blacklisted.
Yeah, bro. So like I remember this one time in particular, like Black Eyed Peas rocked up, right? Surprise visit. And as they come in, they're like, couldn't get anyone to drive us. And I was like, yeah, nah, that's the thing. You can't. They rock up. Taboo came through from the Black Eyed Peas, and we had a little like freestyle session at the centre there. And a couple of the Black Eyed Peas executive producers were there and stuff, and a bloke by the name of Russell James, pretty prolific photographer. He was like Victoria's Secret's like main dude for a minute. They were working on a project, and they come through, you know, showed us what they were working on and stuff. We had a little freestyle session, and then just as I was leaving, again, like that little black fella, like the, you know, I stopped them at the door.
What's going on here?
Yeah, pretty much. I just said, oh, thanks for, you know, coming down and hanging out. And they said, oh, look, we liked what you've done before. Like, do you want to go have a little private one? I said, yeah, fucking oath. So we went back and had another little session, just me and them. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they said, oh, look, we really, really like what you do. How do you feel about coming to LA to record a song? And I was like, fucking no way. Legit, I just got kicked out of school like a few months before this, right? Mm. So fresh out of Nowra.
Oh, right. You just moved straight there.
Yeah. Fresh out, man. Like maybe it would have been a year at most.
Yeah.
And so I think I was 17 when this happened.
Did you know going in there, like, this is it? This is the shot?
Nah. I was just like, again, just that little cheeky black fella, inquisitive, but like,
I'll give it a go.
A bit confident, you know? I did understand the importance of, you know, opportunities and making the most of it when they kind of arise. Like, I could have let the guys just walk out, nothing would have happened. But you know, it wasn't just for that. It was genuine. Like, I just wanted to say thanks, but I did have a little bit of an understanding where it was like, maybe, you know what I mean? And yeah, surely it did work out. Asked me if I wanted to fly to LA, do a song. So, you know, I said, yeah, mad. But, you know, didn't know if it would happen or not. And in between, you know, flying to LA and doing the song, I moved back down the coast. I was living at Shell Harbour at Flinders Estate. It's a little spot down there, lots of mob there. And I remember I ordered some pizza and that. And so they're on a different time. So it was like, I don't know, it was 8 or 9 o'clock or something. It was night time for us. Get a call from a private number. I think it's the pizza. So yeah, mad. Answer this thing, and so, oh, Corey, mate, so it's Russell. I need you to sit in the airport in 2 days. I'm like, oh, shit, mad. Anyways, I fucking, they ring up, said they booked my flight and stuff. Yeah, went to Sydney again, jumped on the flight, and went to LA, recorded a song with Taboo. Pulled up, man, had the full full service, eh? Like the Escalade waiting for me, little sign with my
candy
name.
Candy lack.
Yeah. Bras. And then they took me to this joint. And back then, I didn't know what this thing was, right? We're staying at the W Hotel. Pull up. They leave a credit card down for me. They say, you can buy whatever you want. Just don't buy a car. Bros, all I did was buy DVDs and lobster for breakfast. Lobster for breakfast was mad, and ordering all the mad movies, all the Rock movies. Rock was just doing all the acting shit, so I was getting everything the Rock was in. Got that.
Someone must have bought a car at some point. That's the thing you can't do.
The fact that they had to say don't buy a car means it's happened before.
So we do that, right? Thought I was about to be famous. Thought I was about to be the first Kid Laroi.
Yeah.
I was like, I made it. Mad. Come back to Sydney, straight back to Centrelink and that.
Did you get a cut of the song?
Nah, well, see, here's the thing. The song had a soft launch over there, but never really came out, officially came out. But it did. I remember there were some write-ups on it. Like, we did hit a list of, like, songs, like top songs to, you know, come out around this time, bros. I was on the list there with Kanye. I don't know if I can. Is Kanye still all right to say? This is Kanye.
This is fucking college dropout era.
So I was on there. I remember being on there. There was a thing on like Hip Hop DX. It was like me and Taboo, Kanye, Lil Wayne, all on the list, like top five of the things, right? Yeah. So yeah, that happened. Obviously, from doing that, had a little bit of a buzz. Things were starting, you know, my name was starting to get out there. I was starting to do songs and shows and stuff. And a bloke I'd met around these ways, Frank Trotman, used to work at Music New South Wales. And like, he kind of caught wind of the story just from being around Redfern ways and that, hit me up. And, you know, I was a kid, didn't know how things worked. I was like, fuck, bro, you want to be my manager?
Yeah, right.
And so he managed me for ages, and he was good mates with Briggs. Mm-hmm. So I was doing my thing for a few months, right? And then, you know, standard small town shit, people talking shit on Facebook. One lad, he gets on there, reckons he wrote my stuff.
All right.
And, bro, I was fuming. I was fucking fuming. I rang up the cousins down home, coming back, rang me manager, going off my head. I'm fucking going to get on the train now. I'm going down there. And he goes, nah, don't do that. You know what I mean? He's like, nah, fuck that. I'm getting on the train now. I'm going to go see this cunt.
He's been telling everyone he's the real nookie.
Yeah. And then so anyways, he goes, nah, cool it. And then so he reached out to Briggs. And then Briggs gives me a call. And he goes, hey.
So Briggs has already got a couple of albums out by this point.
Homemade Bombs was out. Yep. I think Blacklist was. It either just dropped or was about to.
Yeah, right.
And then...
So he's still very much Hilltop Hoods era Briggs.
Yeah, bros. The fucking... The Wrong Brother.
Yeah, you got the Wrong Brother.
All that stuff, man. Some of the... So what am I supposed to tell the kids when I can't tell you what fucking day of the week it is? I love that shit, bros. Big fan of him.
Yeah.
Massive fan.
And he kind of... He definitely wasn't the first... Koori rapper, but I guess he was the first one doing features with stadium rappers like Hilltop Hoods, and he had video clips and stuff like that. So,
and you know, he wasn't the first, but he was the first to do it in the way that he did. Yeah. Like, no one has ever done it besides, I'd say, Last Connection.
Yeah.
Street Warriors had a mad run. Local Knowledge, mad. Last Connection done their thing. You know, they were around with Elephant Tracks and that, making a bit of a name. But Briggs, it was something else.
Yeah.
Like the energy, like the music, the statements, like the force. Like he was just undeniable.
So at this point, your average Australian hip hop fan has eyes on him.
Yeah.
But as a young black kid, he's more than anything.
Yeah.
He's God.
Yeah, exactly. He was God level.
Yeah.
And they get a call from Briggs.
Telling you to calm down?
Yes. he goes, fuck that shit. You're not going to get, this is exactly what he said to me. He goes, fuck that shit. You're not going to get anywhere punching down. You got to punch above your weight. And I was one of the only people that ever talked me off a ledge.
Because
I was adamant about the goal. I was going to go down and punch the cunt out of him.
Yeah.
That, I was set. It was happening. Briggs got me off it. Like, and that's all he said. He goes, fuck that shit. Don't punch down. Punch above your weight. Right. And that was enough. And then so that was my first connection with Briggs. And, you know, a few years later than that,
he drops Shep Life.
Yeah, and Bad Apples. Yeah. Boom.
Bad Apples is also one of those songs where kind of, you know, there's a before and after for Bad Apples.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What does he say? You call him good for nothing. I call him cousin. Yeah.
That shit hit me, man. Bad Apples still to this day is something, one of my favorite songs, something I resonate with because I was that kid. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Got called a bad apple, got kicked out of school, all of that stuff. But exactly that, I heard that song, I felt hope. You know what I mean? Still to this day, like, I fucking love that song. Love Briggs, love the Bad Apples family.
Then you start touring with him.
Yeah. See, that was mad. Touring with Briggsy, like, I fucking learn a lot. Super appreciative of, you know, the stuff I got to see and the stuff I got to do. It really helped me with my stage craft. And just being around him, like, you know, you get so many gems from being with the lad. But even that, man, like, a couple of shows, I was in a bit of a bad place and I probably, you know, done some shit shouldn't have done, some, you know, carried on a bit too much. Yep. But, you know, you live and you learn.
Life on the road.
Yeah, but being with him, man, like, actually being his hype man for a good couple of years was, it helped me a lot. And I remember when I got that text, he goes, just a text message out of the blue. Ready to be my hype man or what? Fucking oath. Let's go. Yeah.
And it's interesting, at the start of this interview, I kind of introduced you as a stalwart and, you know, obviously now somewhat of a pioneer. I want to talk about the role you played and, you know, no, everyone likes to take credit for when something happens and something as big as what I'm about to talk about happens, everyone knows where they were, where they met and where they this and that. But you, I was there when you brought out this bucktooth little kid from the fucking Howzo's of Waterloo. I was in the crowd when you brought this little kid out wearing all Rabbitohs kit, the kid Leroy, before anyone knew anything, before he probably even had a social media presence or anything like that. I do remember it. He said, I'm going to bring out this little, we've snuck him into the club tonight. tell me about the role you played there, because it's an undeniable role. There'll be a lot of people saying that they helped the kid Leroy become one of the biggest stars in the world, but I mean, I saw it with my eyes. You did.
Yeah. Well, man, like, I can't take credit for Charlton, bros. Like, he had all the fucking talent and drive in the world. Like, that was the crazy thing about Leroy, man. Like, not only did he have the drive and ambition, but he had the talent to back it up. And, like, he wouldn't take no for an answer. Like, seen him get into scenarios and places where, like, a 14-year-old shouldn't be in there. Like,
what is the yarn I heard where there was someone, was it Juice WRLD or there was an American artist in town and he was having an after party and the kid Leroy managed to get in there with a USB?
Oh, bros, that's probably happened more than once. I'm sure that happened with Juice and, man, all sorts of funny stories, man. Like, there was a little peep yarn, right? So little piece videographer was out here for a show.
So at his peak, like American rappers out here. Yeah.
And so he knew one of the boys, JD, like, used to, when people would come over Sydney and shit, like, used to just take them around. So JD had a little party at a house. So at this house was JD, like, IE, the singer, right? That's JD. Travi P was there. Solo was there. And it was just like a house where everyone would just make music. This video dude comes out. They show him some of Leroy's stuff. They sent it to Lil Peep. Lil Peep's like, fuck, this is mad. Inboxes Leroy straight away. Boom. Mm. He ended up at the hotel room with Sway Lee at one point. The one thing I couldn't sneak him into, but it didn't matter anyway because he ended up linking with him a few days after, was Hidden Festival, the one that Adam 22 was kind of hosting or whatever.
The YouTuber.
Yeah.
The hip-hop YouTuber, yeah.
That's the only thing I couldn't
get. Oh, he ended up giving him a tour of the house.
Leroy was at the fence, at the gate. He's like, Unc, can you get me in? Unc, can you get me in? I was like, I'm going to try. But that's not, the security were tight as fuck. They weren't, it wasn't happening. But he ended up linking with him a few days after anyway. So it was all good. But yeah, man, like, I met Leroy through Rick, who manages 1-4 and Becca Hatch there. So Rick was kind of around him. And like, Rick knew the importance of having your people around you. So he hit me up one day. He goes, oh, I've been working with this indigenous kid from around the ways. Wanted you to come through and just kick it with him. I said, yes, sweet, bro. I'll bring him to the studio one time. So I had a session at the studio. It was me, Solo, Wilster. And, Rick brang Leroy through. And I was like, and, you know, he come through. Oh, Nooks, mad, what's doing, bro? Like, you know what I mean? Black fellas, we all, you know, we know each other. It was like when Briggs, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, I'd been doing my thing by this point. So Leroy kind of, you knew who I was and shit. Came through and said, oh, show us what you got, young fella. Jumped on the mic. Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "The Rick, bro, this is the one, eh?" Yeah. Like proper. It was like some Neo and the Matrix shit. You know, like it was the fucking the one. Yeah, it was the one. You could tell. It was just something else.
Mm.
And then you know, like I used to go see him and his little brother Oz down around Redfern, and that I'd be giving him $20, buy him feeds and shit like that. Just, you know, big family shit, just looking after him.
I was with you. I come down to Sydney for the Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
And I think you or Briggs sorted the tickets, and then he was sitting between us, and he was so young, he wasn't even looking at the Wu-Tang player. He was on Snapchat the whole time. 14-year-old kid. I was like, "Do you maybe want to watch this song? Like, this is called Cream. I think it's like
not interested in the old man.
He was interested, but he was taking it in a different way. He wasn't there to watch like us old fucking codgers were just watching these rappers we grew up with. He was like, "Yeah, that's cool. He'll look up when he's interested."
Yeah. Funny story with that one too. I grabbed him, picked him up after school to take him to that, right? He left his bag, stashed his bag at my house. Never came back and got it. It wasn't too long after that where he took off.
Really?
But the bag's still there. Bag's still there.
You've been in LA for 4 years.
So, hanging around him. And then that one, the block party I threw down at the Lansdowne, Kobe was there. That was like an early Kobe performance as well.
Mm-hmm.
Becca Hatch was there. He hit me up. He goes, "Unc, can I play?" I was not going to say no to the kid, fucking no. So we snuck him in, and you know, the rest is kind of history. And I remember Instagram was a big thing for him at the moment, so when I bring him out, like, part of the thing was I stopped the crowd to say, "Look, gonna bring, you know, stuck this kid in. I need everyone to get your phones out, follow the kid Leroy on Instagram. Trust me, you're gonna thank me for it later." Fucking sure enough, boom. You know, they got in early. This is, I think he went from 20 followers to 200. He was cheering through the roof. He was like, "Fuck yeah, 200 followers." 200.
He'd be on 200 million now.
All those people too would have been like, "I was the 50th follower of the year." Right. He's my mate. He's my mate.
And then, you know, the mad thing to see though is when Leroy came back for the tour, he could have put fucking anyone on stage.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people were expecting him to put on like a big act.
Mm.
He went and grabbed Arthur. He went and grabbed Little Arts. So again, it's Leroy early stages. Just a little lad from around the ways.
Really?
Fuck all songs out. But Leroy put him on, bro.
Yeah, so really?
It was mad. Yeah. It was mad. Like, he would have had the time of his life. Like, private jet flying around Australia doing shows, bro.
Right. So he basically did the Lansdowne.
Yeah.
What you did for him at the Lansdowne. He did it for this kid in Kudos Arena.
Yeah, bro. So, like, that was mad to see him do that. Like, and to go back to, what's the name of the spot, bro? Another one of the youth centers around there. Give him $100,000. Like,
oh, yeah. The factory.
The factory.
Down there in Redfern.
Yeah. So to see him do that, man, it's fucking mad.
Yeah. Where he used to go after school.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
All the love and respect in the world for him. Like, and man, we'd be going to the towers. I remember we went and kicked back with one of my uncles. He's passed away now too. He's like just recently gone. Like, he was like the big song man for down the coast.
Yeah, right.
He had a spot in the towers there.
Waterloo.
Yeah. So we went there one time with Leroy, and yeah. He actually, like, he knew his son, so it was a spin out, bros. You know,
old
uncles too, like, yeah. So, "Oh, yeah, you know, my young fella, he goes at the factory there." Yeah. And I think he's stuck up for Leroy one time. All
oh, right.
This lad, like, there was some drama, bros, and, like, little cuzzo sorted it.
Oh, you obviously, on the road, you know, you sacrifice a lot, I guess. I'm sure the kid Leroy is a perfect example of that. He'd be living out of a briefcase for 3 years now. And, you know, you can't feel sorry for someone in that position because they're living the dream. But you know, on every level, whether it's, you know, I mean, you've got non-stop gigs around NAIDOC. And we're about
pay
to
week.
Yeah. We're also about to talk about, you know, the event you've got coming up this week.
Mm.
But I've got a bone to pick with you, Nookie. As a proud young black man, how dare you miss the first ever Koori knockout in your hometown?
Oh, bro, you had to bring that one up. Fuck, how do you even know that?
I was wondering. I was watching it. I spent the whole weekend watching it on NITV. I said, surely Nookie's going to do like a pop-up gig here at some point.
Yeah. Look.
So tell the black cockatoos, win their first ever Koori knockout. That means you get to host the next year. Pandemic hits. There's no Koori knockout for 2 years. They finally get the chance to host. From now, there's two people that are famous. There's Nookie, the man we're interviewing today, and there's Andrew Walker. I'm sure Andrew Walker was there.
Oh, brother.
I'm sure he had a run.
Yeah, 100% he would have had a jersey on. He might have been with the Black Cockatoos.
What happened to you?
Right, so here's where I fucked up. Like, I self-managed at this point, and that, like, double booking ain't the issue with me. It's fucking triple booking.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So I had this Treaty Day Out gig booked a long time ago. And my dates are fucked up. I thought the long weekend of October was, in my head, it was the week after.
Yeah.
So I was like, when the Treaty Day Out mob hit me up, and this was well within a year advance, they hit me up. I said, lock it in, boom, done. Sweet. Because I thought, you know, the long weekend was the week after. And then, when me cousin there, he runs the Black Cockatoos, Wello rings up. Yeah, we're locking in, for this after party. You can headline it. He goes, cuz, I've had four different cunts come down here, drop your name. And I tell them all, you know he's my cousin, right? I can just ring him direct. And two of these people I've never heard of before.
Yeah, yeah.
He was telling me the names. I'm like, cuz, I've never heard of them in my life. So everyone down there trying to, you know. So, yeah, I said, yeah, bro, just, you know, anything for down home. Let's do it. And then when I see the dates were the same day, I'm like, fuck.
Cool, fuck.
And then the thing is with these Victorian mob, they paid half up front too, so I already had half. And then I would have felt terrible doing that.
Leaving them in the lurch. Yeah,
and then, so in my head, I'm trying to work it out. I'm like, oh, look, I was playing a primo spot too. I closed this festival. Like, I asked him, I said, hey, can you ask one of the earlier guys if they want to swap? I'll play first so I can try and get back.
From Melbourne to Nowra?
Yeah.
How would you do that? Wollongong Airport?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. But it just wasn't happening, so I missed it.
It would have been one of those ones as well where, like, someone calls in sick to work and then they're just spotted on telly at the sport. Well, like, they're just watching the knockout and like, oi.
Yeah, yeah. And I would have felt like, and these Treaty Victorian mob, they're sick too. Like, yeah. they're mad. So I would have felt terrible if I'd done that one to them too. Like, I ain't going to lie. Thought crossed my mind.
Yeah, just flake.
The thought did cross my mind. And the airports were fucked at this moment as well. Yeah, remember when the big dramas at the airport? Mm. So there was a chance I wasn't going anyway. Yeah, so I rocked up because I was supposed to go to Melbourne like a week before that for a gig. Wasn't happening because of the airport drama.
Yeah.
So there was a chance I wasn't going. So I rocked up and I thought, look, you know, if the airport's fucked and the flight's cancelled, I'll just go to Nowra. And I won't feel bad because it's true.
Yeah.
So then that one I felt.
You honored the first booking, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of rang the boys and said, look, I can't make it, but fuck, I'll sling you some bucks. Go get a VIP booth on me and that. So,
Yeah.
Try.
Oh, they'll win again. You'll get your shot again.
Yeah. And it was mad to see him win because, bro, they came close like the previous 2-3 years, real close. So to see him actually take it out.
I think ESPN need to get down there and put cameras on the Koori knockout. It's one of the most intense sporting kind of exhibitions you'll ever watch.
Bruh, like, should be like a no limit boxing knockout of just punch ons on the field.
The Rose Boys got into a bit of a Barney.
Oh, I think it was with the lads. The first game.
Everyone was accusing them of buying Latrell, and they said he chose to play for us.
Oh, bros, I wasn't even like mad at Latrell. It was fucking Benny Barber, isn't it? Can't that come from Darwin?
I remember Matty Rose a couple of years ago taking someone's head off, and the ref was like, mate, you got to go for 10.
And that's rare. To get sent off in the Koori knockout. They certainly have a bit more elasticity with the rules. Bigger hits. But, you know, you missed the knockout down home, but you're going to make it up to him this week.
Yeah.
Tell us the event.
Yes.
What's happening? Black Power House.
Black Power House, yes. January 26th, we're doing a full venue takeover of the Power House Museum from the outside of the building to every single level on the inside. Every corner of that, we got covered.
So the old Power House where, you know, anyone from New South Wales would have been on a school excursion there.
Yeah.
They got the science centres and they got all that kind of stuff. They got the rail museum. It's a massive space.
Yeah.
Next to Darling Harbour there, isn't it?
Next to Darling Harbour. Yeah, right down there near the casino. They've given you it.
Yeah.
You've booked it out.
Booked it out. It was, man, it was funny how it all kind of came about. So I started this thing last year, We Are Warriors, as like a, you know, purpose-driven business about, you know, kind of highlighting Indigenous success stories and, you know, just doing cool shit.
Just your youth centre kind of history, right?
Yeah. So, like, from day one, starting music, I've always wanted to do this. Like, I wanted to take that youth centre, you know, give it some Anavar or something. Like, just youth centre on steroids is what I wanted to do from day one. I knew music was the vehicle to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, it was always about leaving Nowra and coming back to doing something like that, right? So COVID hit and I wanted to you know, to do something. It actually all kind of started around like the Black Lives Matter thing. Remember, we were at the march and shit together. Like a mate of mine hit me up to have a little bit of a yarn. We had a yarn. He said, you know, well, what could we do? I said, oh, bruhs, you know, for me it's not like a, you know, it's kind of, it's a trending topic at the moment, bruh, but it ain't new. And it's fucking, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to do something, bro, it's going to take some time. And I told him my idea of, you know, starting like a youth center on steroids. And, you know, this is peak COVID. So getting a building and opening a youth center wasn't going to happen. So we took it online and kind of launched there. 7 months in, a kind of opportunity popped up with City of Sydney for a creative space.
Mm-hmm.
Applied for that. It's not open yet, but we got it, right? Mm-hmm. So We got a physical spot now and, you know, hopefully it'll be open pretty, you know, the first few months of this year. So We Are Warriors has a physical space for the City of Sydney.
Not too far from your Redfern.
Not too far from it. And like just straight up the road from the powerhouse, right? We shot a documentary back last year that we've been sitting on for a while, looking for a way to release it. And, you know, as we're in our new building, just kind of just chilling, looking at the powerhouse, why not?
Yep.
Let's ask him.
So that inquisitive little kid.
Yeah. And then we fought, you know, powerhouse, black power. Ooh. Yeah, sounds mad, eh? Black power, black powerhouse. Puss, let's do it. I don't know if they'll take it or not. Anyways, we went down, had the yarn, met up with Emily McDaniel. He runs like the, you know, Indigenous side of things down there. And we said, hey, sis, we got this. We're thinking this. What do you reckon? It's because we had these conversations last year, right? She goes, oh, like, you know, I'd like to get behind this 100%. How's March next year? And I said, oh, sis, has to be January 25. Originally, it was the night before.
Mm.
So, like, you know, my thinking was, like, you know, We Are Warriors, like, the acronym is, like, war when you say it out loud. So, like, for me, it was, like, the night before the war, the night before the battle, the night before January 26th. And then we just, you know, we decided just, let's just do it on the 26th. It's like our 1 year birthday. It's a big thing. And they got behind it. They took it. I was a bit shocked. I was like, fuck, they're doing it. They're letting us do it. So yeah, we kind of taken over the whole building. Yeah.
So what are you running there? You got panels,
yeah.
We got to do the screening of your doco.
Yeah, screening of the doco, which is called Through the Fire. And it's kind of, it's the story of We Are Warriors, but roughly follows like the story of like our dream and story back home of the Black Cockatoo, which is a, you know, the story of that one goes is, you know, a white cockatoo flies through fire, you know, gets burnt, deals with a bunch of shit inside the fire, and you know, you can let that shit consume you, you can lay down and die, or you can say, fuck this, I'm gonna keep going and come out the other side. So that white cockatoo kept flying. Came out the other side, you know, different. Like, he was black, he was burnt, charred, scarred, you know, had to kind of dig deep in there, learn a lot of lessons about himself and the world. Came out different. Like, he carries those lessons with him today, you know what I mean? So it's like a story of, you know, kind of hope and not giving up and coming through on the other side. And what he done when he got out was, like, he sang the rain to put the fire out. So it's about making change as well, you know, like putting the fire out. So we follow that story and, you know, kind of depict We Are Warriors by following that. And the reason why we've done that is, you know, I went through a pretty dark time, pretty rough time. Like, there's a few moments you would have seen there, Uncle Arch. But went and done a little detox and that's all I needed. Like, I was on my way to rehab.
Circuit breaker.
Yeah, I was, you know, before you go to rehab, you got to go do your 2 week cleanse.
Yeah, yeah.
That was enough for me. That's all I needed. I just needed the 2 weeks.
Get back in the gym.
Yeah. But that 2 weeks while I'm sitting in the little, you know, the like little drug and alcohol center over Concord, it's like it's the drug and alcohol and the mental health thing put in the one. Like, yeah, it's pretty, out of all the joints, there's some real nice joints you can go. This one was, it was a hectic one, but it was good. It helped. It was what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
I went in there. And like discussions about We Are Warriors were in place before I went in. And then like I was working with RGA, which is like a big branding, marketing, design sort of agency, like some top-notch guys. And Blackfella went missing on. I went missing because I was in there for 2 weeks, right? So they're like, fuck, where'd this lad go? And but so while I'm in there doing the detox, all I worked on was like We Are Warriors. So like that was me going through the fire. We Are Warriors is what came out on the other side. But they got the full experience, man. Like, I walked out of the rehab, still my shit in the garbage bag. I'm ringing them, so I'm coming in. I rocked up to their office for a meeting, garbage bag, clothes and shit in it, dropping on the floor. All right, where we at?
The black cockatoo.
Yeah, so that's how it all kind of kicked off. So, we're premiering that little doco there, which is kind of just like a half music video, like hybrid sort of thing. Yeah. Got a bunch of music from, you know, the regular culprits, Barker, Kobe D.
So you got different rooms, different spaces in the whole thing?
Yeah, different rooms.
And what is it, an evening thing? It's all day?
From 5 to 9.
A night?
Yeah. Oh, beauty. Yep. So, you know, in an ideal world, if you want to plan your day, you go to march in the morning, go kick back at Yarbin for a bit, come to our thing, then go to the after party, boom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, taking over.
A Jagged Edge.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. 112 and that. Fucking Randy Travis.
Bone Thugs.
Yeah, Randy Travis and Bone Thugs. That's it. Man, what was my Spotify rap that time? I had a mad one. It was like, Ben and Johnson hit me up when I posted it. He goes, that's the most South Coast thing I've ever fucking seen. My top two was 50 Cent and Randy Travis. You know, you get the top two, 50 Cent, Randy Travis, and then each other.
Your yearly rap is 50 Cent and Randy Travis.
Yeah. Taking over the whole thing, there's the music side of things, and then we've got Luke Curry Richardson doing like a photography exhibition, Coffin Birth, that mad illustrator done some work for us. Yep. It's hectic. Like, I hit her up. I said, Black Power, sis. That's the brief. So if you want to do a picture of the Endeavor on fire, fucking go hard. Go hard. And, says something along those lines too. So there's that. We've got like a main cinema area for the viewing. And there's a thing in there called King's. It's like a small cinema, right? So I walked into King's the other day doing the site rec and all that. Look, big professional now, bruv. Yep. Doing the site recce. Going to see King's, right? And it's like a small, intimate theatre. And I walk in there. And as I walk in, I kind of reflect back on a story my nan told me. And this was a pretty funny moment for me. Like, my pop, he's English as well, right? Me pop, he's from England. My nan's, you know, black fella from down the coast. And I asked me pop one time, I said, fucking, because all his mates were black too. I said, how'd you end up with the black fellas? He goes, they fucking didn't like me either because I was a pom. him and Nan have been together for a long time, so they can have little playful jabs and that, you know what I mean? So, you know, like the oldies, like recollect their days and stuff, tell you yarns. So they're sitting there talking about the movies one time, and Nan made like a little joke, like, fucking, you had seats.
Yeah.
Right? You had seats. I was like, what do you mean, Nan? You had seats. And she goes, back, you know, these movies back home, yeah, back in the day, like all the white kids, like the, you know, the tiered seats and shit, they had seats. She goes, me and my brothers and sisters, when we'd go there, they had a roped off section at the front just underneath the screen where we'd have to stand and kind of look up. So, like, they, you know, they're there watching a movie with their head up like this all the time. So, they, you know, have a sore neck after the movies. So, I'm in there, like, in this little, the King's part. And then, you know, my head just goes back to Nan telling me that story. So, I was like, all right, we're gonna do a roped off section in here, kind of acknowledging that. And my Nan's coming from now. So, I'm gonna, you know, we're going to do the roped off section, but I'll make sure my nan's got the fucking best seat in the house now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. She's coming on up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it sounds like you're pretty busy this next week, mate.
Yeah. Pretty busy.
Well, we'll try to get down there. Everyone listening should get down there for the Warriors and the Kings and the Black Cockatoos down there at the Black Powerhouse. Yeah. And we didn't even have time today to get into your media career. You're fucking hosting the Triple J Hip Hop Show now.
Yeah, yeah, on their blackout every Sunday, 5 to 6 p.m. So float.
You're hosting the Cyphers too?
Yeah, they tap me in every now and then.
Yeah, right.
The Bars of Steel. Yeah. But yeah, that was kind of... That was a mad one.
Yeah.
All over the joint now.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, Nook. All the best. Got a fair bit going on.
Yeah, no, hectic. Thanks for having me, eh?
Thank you.